Hello. Hi, Judy.
Hello, my lovelies.
How are you?
I am very well, thank you. Excited to be here.
How is the running going?
Oh, well, you picked a bad week to ask me that, to be fair. Right, like, I'm not gonna lie, since I did the marathon last year, it's been up and down. I'm inconsistent at the best of times, but the British weather is not helping me out in that matter.
My 2024 goal was run once a week. I was like, if I set the bar low once a week, do that. First 3 weeks, smashed it, and then yeah, I've not run since. I find it. Are you a fair weather runner?
Absolutely. 1,000,000%. I would love to be saying otherwise and living the Goggins life, but no, I saw it drizzling this afternoon. I was like, no, I'm just gonna walk instead. So yes, no.
We just wanted to start by asking you how you got into coaching and what led you to be where you are today in your mega successful career.
Okay, so for context, I've been coaching for about 8 years now. I entered this industry when I was like 23. I'm 33, so it's kind of been a decade now that I've sort of been in the space, observing it, been through the highs and lows of changes within, the fitness industry. But I'd be lying if I said it wasn't sparked by my own sort of career change. I was a veterinary nurse in a previous life, so I went to university and studied veterinary nursing. At the RBC in Potters Bar, and ended up being pretty burnt out from that. Found a bit of a love for fitness, saw how transformative it was being empowered or educating myself on nutrition, and I thought, well, I guess I could do this pretty easily for a living and help other people sort of achieve that those kind of results and just go on that journey and support them on that process. I guess, like any coach, it's kind of replicating what you wish you'd had for yourself back then at the beginning. And yeah, my own love of understanding women's health and physiology and CBT and mental health has, I guess, accumulated in, a pretty decent time span of just being in this space coaching.
And how have you found it since you've moved on from March on to being on your own?
It's been great, to be honest. I'm really sort of excited by just developing like a community, especially within the women's health, talking more about it. And I think just developing, having a little bit more faith in myself. I think for anybody that starts their own coaching business, when you take that leap of faith, it's such a risk, but you get all the reward at the same time. So yeah, I'm enjoying sort of having more flexibility in terms of schedule, meeting new people, developing new courses and content and stuff. So yeah, I'm hugely excited by that next chapter of my life, especially when it comes to coaching.
I hadn't realised you'd left March on until your story yesterday. I thought you were still there, but then you did say, I've not made a song and dance about it. But yeah, I was like, yeah, no, I don't do realise you left.
I was with them for 7 years, so to be honest, it was a really long time span, and I absolutely loved my time there. And I think it just seeing the growth of it, I felt very privileged to be a part of it. But I think as a person, you also need to, make sure you're checking in with how you see yourself, where your growth is, and what you want out of, what you want to build, where you want your life to look like, whether you want to work for somebody, build your own thing, expand. So yeah, it was just a different chapter. And I love everybody there. I still see them fairly regularly, and I'm still voice noting Sammy or every day most of the time, who was my colleague in the nutrition space there. So yeah, it's been fun, and yeah, a whole new chapter.
So of everything in women's health, what would you say is your sort of niche area, if you have one, or is there anything you particularly are passionate about or that you like to talk about the most?
I would say menopause is pretty huge for me personally, just because I've been on hormone replacement myself for 2.5 years. That's kind of a bit of a long story and a bit of a unique medical case in that respect. But I mean, it's hormones and contraceptives and things like that. It's just, yeah, perimenopause and menopause, and I guess going through that process myself. I went to Harley Street and saw specialists. So I think it seems such a shame for me to not have that knowledge and sort of share it, build it into my coaching, become more specialized in helping, again, a lot of women in towards their late 30s and 40s and 50s go through that process, because I just don't think there's enough support out there within that space especially.
Yeah, and I had another question actually that I've just thought of that somebody sent along, which was about sort of nutrition in menopause. And she said it's just there's so much out there, there's so much conflicting information out there, and now there's all these products that have popped up. And I think people, even though, you know, as a coach you can say to them, like, it's like for some people it's not going to be that much different to what we would normally prescribe for like a healthy body, like, and getting your movement in and getting the fiber in and getting the protein in and looking after your sleep. And, you know, I know you're a huge advocate of like whole health, and looking at all the factors that affect our nutrition choices as well. But I think because there is this, you know, you're getting these adverts thrown at you left, right and centre, people just go, ah, like, should I be taking this? Is there something that's going to really help me? Or do I actually, you know, need to just stay away from, like, some of the more negative things that I'm taking in and consuming and, you know, managing my stress and my sleep and all of that stuff?
Absolutely. I think if you are prescribing something quite rigid or calling it a menopause diet or some sort of miracle cure for it, I think that's also going to be a red flag for somebody that you probably shouldn't follow or be paying attention to, because they're just not invested in you. They're more invested in potentially financial gain from supplements. I mean, supplements is a multi-billion dollar industry. Like, I'm not here to try and bring that down. Like, I'm here to just support women, show them the evidence behind science and research. Like, if that's not there for a product or a supplement or a way of eating or whatever, then it's just a no-go. That's more in line with how I like to be as a coach. And I guess there are a lot of people within this space that don't, but menopause is such a huge area and it's gained a lot of momentum in terms of people talking about it, which I think is incredible. I'm always going to be here for that. But on the downside, people are also going to try and capitalize that, and maybe, you know, that's the darker side of something like that.
Yeah, definitely. So shall we start with menopause then, as we are there already?
Yeah, I did. Most of my questions that came through were just very general hormone questions and PCOS. But one question I did have was, why am I gaining weight in different places now I'm older? Is it my hormones?
Which is such a great question to ask, because I think there's this level of you waking up one day around about perimenopause and menopause age, thinking that you have just gotten some sort of spare tire around your lift. And it's such a common thing within hormones and menopause. And there's scientific reasons for that. A lot of it is lifestyle related. I think we still neglect to talk about the fact that as we get older, we become more sedentary, we move less, and it still is always going to circle back to energy balance and the ins and outs from calories perspective and also movement. We can't get around that, but there are many things that indirectly impact that. So the shift of fat storage between losing those hormones is significant. And we adopt more of a male fat pattern when we lose estrogen in our body. So we adopt more of a male fat pattern, which is around our stomach, exactly where we as women don't want to. But because we've spent our whole lives with a certain maybe physique or shape, to then lose the hormones that then affect where fat is stored on our body, we're going to notice that, because we're obviously quite self-aware people. We see ourselves in mirrors, we feel the fit of clothes, and it changes our shape. And sometimes that can be really disconcerting, and you think that that's, you know, an immediate weight gain. Sometimes it can be irrespective of weight. Maybe their weights just stay the same and their shape has changed a little bit because of that. But to put it scientifically, it's called re-estrification, which is where fatty acids lift up from certain areas of the body, more around our hips and our legs, and they accumulate more in to around our stomach section. So that's kind of the scientific-based element of it. But yeah, a lot of it can be offset by lifestyle factors, as you guys said at the beginning, and making sure that you're not taking your eye off the ball when it comes to your movement and energy, and that just, you know, becomes off-kilter and you're just consuming more calories than you expected to be. So it's more self-awareness.
Yeah, I think it's also, like you say, this time of that time of life for a lot of people is when, like, they have either teenagers, elderly parents,
exactly.
Like, like, you know, juggling careers, and you've got all those life stresses, and then all of those factors bumped on top of, like, I was just talking to somebody in a class actually who was saying, you know, the teenage hormones and my hormones are an absolute clash of the titans at the minute. And I was like, I hear you.
That was me and my mum. I remember my mum always yelling at me, like, because I studied in the States, and anytime I'd come home, she'd be like, you're messing up with my hormones. I haven't had a period for however long, and you've just come in and ruined everything. I'm like, whoa, bro. Sod about that.
Just by being
there.
Like
home for a week and it's just hormone chaos.
That's so interesting to hear other people's experience. And I guess, like, if I asked my mum, she would literally shrug her shoulders and be like, well, I don't know, like, menopause just happened. And I'm like, what do you mean? I go, what information? And you're going to have, depending on, you know, the female link in your family and how sort of generationally the self-awareness is there, whether you're going to be able to have that information or not, and how your experience is. So it's hugely, yeah, genetic as well from that perspective.
Yeah, my mum struggled with menopause massively, like had all the symptoms for at least 10 years, is struggling with different types. She always listens to these. Hi, mum. She's going back and forth between different types of HRT and what's going to work and what's not. So I've seen it at its probably worst, like the skin, the flushes, the everything, all of it. She ticked a lot of the boxes. So I'm now like, right, what can I do best to prepare? And I guess that's probably a good question for the podcast, is what can somebody do to best prepare for perimenopause or menopause?
Well, going into that stage of a life, like those 10 years, we don't tend to think about menopause or in our 30s or even our 20s, but you should be really thinking about it at every stage of your life. Whatever age we are as women in reproductive age, like this is going to be up to 10 years from our early 40s. Potentially, we're going to see that wild shift of hormones fluctuating. You may not, again, like depending on how menopause affects you. But I mean, I'm pretty sure it's about 80% of us will experience menopausal type symptoms, especially going through perimenopause. And the way it affects your brain, your mental health, there's a reason why there's some really alarming stats around things like mental health and suicide and anxiety, especially as we enter menopause. So it's really not something to take lightly and just kind of stereotype as hormones, because those hormones play such a huge part in our bodies that when we lose them or things change, we can't just shrug our shoulders and be like, well, that's just life. Like, we have to embrace learning, use the power of medication or HRT if that's an option you want to choose, and be supported in that journey because it's really rough.
Yeah, completely. We've had a question about PCOS and menopause and whether having polycystic ovary syndrome does affect the way that you would transition through menopause. And if so, how would you navigate that? And what can you do to best sort of arm yourself for that transition?
Oh no, we've had a crash.
I would say, depending on how PCOS affects you and your body, whether you ovulate or not, or you're missing cycles.
Didi, your video has crashed and we're losing your audio as well. Don't know if it's our end or...
Right.
I think depending on how PCOS affects your cycles and whether you are whether you have cycles or not, sometimes you may not, that delaying in ovulation can delay maybe the timing of when you go through menopause. So you may find that you go through menopause a little bit later potentially. And how it affects menopause, I mean, menopause is already difficult enough, right? Add in another condition like PCOS and you really want to make sure you're going into it as optimal as you can in terms of insulin sensitivity, a healthy body weight, a good amount of muscle mass on you, because those things really accelerate and decline or become even more difficult as you enter perimenopause and menopause. So I would say it's a bit of a double-edged sword, that for somebody that is already struggling with a hormonal condition, then entering into those fluctuations.
So can you go into, well, I mean, you're pretty expert on this as well, aren't you, PCOS? Mm-hmm. For people who don't know what that is and what it means for people, can you just explain a little bit about what PCOS is?
Well, one, it can affect your hunger and your appetite because hormones are really interlinked between your hunger hormones, so that can dysregulate that. Often you can have what is described, even in science and research, as like a deranged appetite. So you may really struggle with emotional eating and your body, your ability to utilize the carbohydrates in your diet because of the high testosterone affecting how you use insulin and the testosterone affecting glucose and your body's ability to use that insulin too. So it can really play a slight havoc on some of the mechanisms that can help maintain a healthy body weight, and it can just be a little bit more challenging. And also it can affect your basal metabolic rate by quite a significant amount. I'd say anywhere from like 10 to 40%. So that means that, you know, you can have two women with the same physiologies, yet somebody who, and say they both want to try and diet and reduce their body fat percentage, one may have to diet up to 40% less calories than somebody that isn't struggling with PCOS. And in a coaching capacity, that can really come into, you know, a difficult territory, because that's not an easy thing to have to deal with, especially when that means you may have to be more aggressive in kind of calories, or you're just going to find it more of a struggle to pursue dieting.
And especially difficult for smaller women as well, which I know is something that you post about quite reasonably regularly, is, you know, women who are already, you know, sort of 5'2", 5'5" and under, and already you kind of go in, you know, that would need to be a deficit, but like, this is problematic in itself, because who wants to be eating that low calories to try and lose body fat?
Exactly. And I'm a firm proponent of, you know, everyone talks negatively about 1200 calories, but realistically, when you're, I don't promote anybody eating that little, but when you're dealing with somebody that's 5'1", that has PCOS, that is already a really small, like, body composition and doesn't have a large BMR anyway, and that's already challenged. I mean, there's some seriously low numbers that would need to be implemented to affect your weight if you're not using exercise or an expenditure to counterbalance that. So yeah, I mean, being 5'0" myself, not struggling on HRT, it's really difficult. And I sympathize a lot with my clients that come to me, and they are. I get a lot of PCOS, petite women, and I'm like, well, yeah, let me tell you, this is going to be difficult. So you better buckle your boots and hold on for dear life.
Yeah, and it's really tricky, that, isn't it, to get sort of people into the mindset of kind of not then being just like, balls to it then, you know? It's like, if you can get your head around that it's going to be a bit more tricky and sort of have a bit of a sort of switch of change of mind, that's always really helpful.
Yeah, the clients I've had with PCOS, there's this almost like mindset of, I'm broken, I'm never going to lose weight, I'm never going to be because of this. And I was told I had PCOS, and I used that as an excuse for so long. I was like, well, that's why I can't lose weight. Well, that's why I'm struggling. And it's unhelpful to use it as an excuse, even though it is, like, it does make it harder. But when you change your mindset from I can't because to, okay, this is the hand I've been dealt, and I still can lose weight, and I still can better my health, and I can do all of these things, you know, regardless of my size, and just switching the mindset from I'm broken and I can't to some, like, just reframing it to a little bit more positive. Like, yes, you absolutely can still lose weight. You still can run a marathon. You still can do all of these things. It's just finding a way that works for that individual. So mindset change was the biggest thing for me when dealing with clients anyway, and helping them realize, yeah, it's going to be more of a struggle, but it's still absolutely possible. Mm-hmm. You can't just say, oh, it's my hormones, so I can't. It's like, yes, it's making it harder, but what can we do?
Yeah.
Basically.
Anything to add on
of
that,
course.
Dids?
And I guess, well, only that, like, none of us, despite the amount of cards we may have in our deck, is an exception to the rule of thermogenetics, right? It is all in context of energy balance. So you could have, you know, thyroid issues, you could have hormone issues, you could have all of this deck of cards that could be contributing to making pursuing things and it's difficult to look at what it is you're pursuing, whether that is truly worth it to you. Like, if I'm honest, I'll have that discussion to say it's okay. Really, there is no rule to the exception of energy balance, and you may have this entire deck of cards that can feel really consuming, thyroid, hormone, constant struggles with an area. So you either look at changing your mindset and understanding it, like, what are you trying to pursue? There are a lot of health benefits to, with PCOS specifically, changing your body weight by up to like 5%. So we're not talking like you have to lose a multitude of like, you know, stones upon stones or lose a significant amount, but even small amounts of weight loss when it comes to fertility, PCOS or hormone conditions can have such a huge impact on improving things. So yeah, either you address what is it you're trying to achieve, do we really, like, is it worth it, and how can we change our mindset to make that process as easy as possible for you without allowing it to become a bit of a, you know, woe is me, or this is super difficult. Like, as a coach, you're there to sort of guide that journey and help them along that way.
Yeah.
One of the questions was, how much do our hormones, I think you may have touched on it already about lifestyle factors, but how much do hormones directly impact our weight? Because no matter how much I explain energy balance to clients, if they are frustrated and they believe something is wrong, then it doesn't matter about the science. It's my hormones. So I've had a question, how much do the hormones directly impact our weight? And also, is there a specific blood test to check your hormones?
Well, for the first part, yes, hormones do. I don't want to say directly, it's indirect. Like, all of these things are interlinked. So hormones are going to be the reason why it's affecting your energy balance. But all of these things affect behaviours. Like, you're looking at behaviours, whether that's emotional eating, overconsumption of calories, being a sedentary lifestyle. So all of those things can affect it. And I guess we don't talk enough about hormones in relation to hunger and appetite. So that's already something that's impacting that can make you want to eat more potentially, or that can hugely, that's interlined with hormones as well, especially as women during a cycle. So yes, hormones affect your mood, your appetite, your sleep, everything. So I'm not here to discount the fact that indirectly hormones can affect your ability to manage weight or achieve results in any sort of body composition goal. Everything is interlinked from a hormone perspective.
So that leads us on to another question, which was a voice note. So I'm going to try and just
voice note.
Yeah. So this person trains HYROX. So she does a real mixture of running, weightlifting, and you know what HYROX is, like, a lot of mixed movement.
Uh-huh.
She was on a contraceptive pill, said her periods were very little, like, she was spotting, if that, couldn't really track her cycle because it just wasn't really there. She stopped taking the pill, her period has come back, and she's like, I can't believe the difference of having a cycle and, like, how much more energy I've got. And yeah, her question was like, can it have that much of an effect? Like, the pill, you know, how I felt while I was taking the pill and what was going on with my periods to where I am without it.
Yeah, and 1,000,000%, before we came on the podcast and you told me a little bit of context to that, I was going to sort of say, like, what difference did she know? And whenever I'm discussing sort of contraception with a client, they're umming and ahhing about coming off it and how it's hurting them. The thing to know about exogenous hormones, or, you know, the pill or any contraceptives, if it's in like a pill format, is it can completely blunt your natural production, which can have its positives and it can have its negatives. So you just don't get the highs of having your estrogen be high. You don't get the effects of, you know, the positive effects of going through your normal hormone fluctuations, because they are there. But when you flatline everything, you maybe don't get the negatives, because it's managing sort of your womb lining, it's maybe helping you to combat any issues potentially with PCOS. Obviously, that's a fairly common resort given if you're struggling with it, is to manage those hormones that are a little bit out of balance by just medically controlling them and flatlining them. But as your client can see from performance, from athletes, having a bit more autonomy and taking yourself on that journey, I think is an incredibly powerful thing for a female to do. And I think, I mean, we get put on it at what, like 16, 17, and most of us have spent our entire lives having to have some, it can potentially bring a lot of colour back into your life and mood, because there are estrogen receptors in every part of your body. And there can be positives and negatives to sort of stepping into that journey, as your client has seen. But yeah, I guess the answer to that is 1,000,000%. She's noting clearly for her that that's maybe an option she would prefer to have, is to explore that.
Yeah.
She's great.
Have you got any other questions you had written down?
I didn't have a question about concept, and one of my clients just came off the pill, and she's been on it for years. Like you said, she's probably been on it since like 16 years old. Feels like a different person, but like not always in the best way. She's like, feels like her mood is erratic. She's all over the place. So what kind of impact does the pill have on hormones and how that affects mood?
Well, like I said, when you're... So for the first 1 to 14 days of your cycle, you're in the follicular phase, which is where estrogen slowly climbs. So once you've finished your couple of days of bleeding, you've shed your womb lining, that's when your hormones have started rising to when you ovulate, which is usually halfway point of your cycle. And that splits into the follicular phase and then the luteal phase. So I always like to say in the follicular phase, you're kind of like Beyonce, and you get to experience potentially the benefits of having high energy. You're more focused. You've got more zest for life. You've probably got higher libido. Like, all the beautiful things that come with estrogen as a sex hormone are going to be there. And when you flatline that with a certain chemical level from, I guess, hormones or contraception, you aren't maybe going to have that full Beyonce effect potentially. But it just also may mean that you experience, so with the luteal phase being more progesterone-based, I always like to reference it to, I don't know, like a Billie Eilish or a Kristen Stewart or a character that's kind of a
Kristen
bit more,
Stewart.
Or like, it, you know, introverted, introspective. It's our pregnancy hormone, so it's there to make you feel safe. And once you understand what these hormones do for your body and what it's trying to achieve from fertility, then you can be like, oh, that makes sense as to why my mood is so kind of a bit low in PMS week, or you see that shift. Because once you ovulate, we are really sensitive to losing those hormones. It can be quite a sharp decline. And especially like with the menopause, you know, you go from having estrogen or perimenopause, your estrogen, you can be Beyonce one day and then Kristen Stewart the next. Like, it's an absolute back and forth.
Both so on the same day.
Exactly, right? So I think it allows, when you understand it, it's like, oh, I'm not just going crazy, or like, this makes sense as to why I'm feeling this way. Even if it's from training or energy or fatigue, you could potentially feel certain ways. It's not prescriptive. I don't like saying, on this day you will feel this way, because most women would turn around and tell me to shut up. Like, that's just not applicable. You need to know how hormones affect you in the different phases of your cycle. And yeah, a lot of things can affect that, good and bad.
Which I guess leads us into about training around cycles and periods. And if clients are wondering, should they change their training around their cycle and plan it around or not? And their nutrition, should they be changing their nutrition around their cycle?
Training, I would say, wow, I think to sort of say, you know, don't exercise at all in your luteal phase or PMS week, just don't lift heavy at all, and kind of really lean into that. I think a lot of people that are high performance or doing CrossFit or HYROX would just be like, that's one not in line with how I want to train. Like, so a lot of people don't like being dictated to, and I'm that person. Like, tell me not to do something and I'll go out and do it. Like, if you tell me I can't run a marathon on day certain number of my cycle, I'd be like, well, I'm just going to prove you wrong anyway. So I think I would never be prescriptive in that way, but you may experience certain things in those two phases of your cycle. So Beyonce, she's got a better ability to grow muscle. She's got more energy in her sessions. She has a spike of testosterone before she ovulates. So you may hit a PB in the gym. It's your most optimal time frame of those 2 weeks in which to grow muscle, because she's also quite an anabolic hormone. But I think there's a lot of research around how anabolic she is and the potential of it. But I think there's enough research to suggest that it's a really optimal time, as any time is, to get your strength training and your sessions done. Whereas day 14 to day 28, depending on if you're a textbook cycle, which not many women are, you are potentially a little bit more fatigued. You are at a higher risk of injuries because of progesterone affecting tendons and ligaments and laxity in them. You can kind of pick up the same weight and feel like it's 10 times heavier than it was last week. So you may psychologically, and the way your body recovers, want to use that time to bring it down a bit, do more lower intensity training.
So another question was, do you recommend a cycle tracker? And would you, so I do track. Do you track your cycle?
No.
Right. I track my cycle, but I also just go, how do I feel today? It spits me out a score and goes like, just take it easy if you want to, you know, blah, blah, blah. So what's your opinion on tracking versus just listening to your body? Or do you think it should be a mixture of the two?
Well, I was really curious about hearing the end of your story with your tracker. Your tracker, you sort of said it spits out a number or a score at you.
Yeah.
So how do you kind of find the interpretation of it or the data that you get?
Well, I mean, basically, because it's like a series of questions that are like, how have you slept? What's your mood like? Are you sore? How much alcohol have you had? Did you experience insomnia? You know, there's like, I think it's like 20 questions basically. And then it'll go, you know, and then it also, because I put where I am in my cycle in it, I think it just correlates it to that. And then just this number comes out, and it can be, you know, on the days where I'm like, yeah, no shit, it's 40, you know, or there's other days where it's like, you're ready to perform. And I'm like, I don't feel like I'm ready to perform.
You do that every day? Is it every day?
Yes. Oh. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's quite an event. I guess, yeah, if you go to that level of detail, I think that's amazing. I guess recently with a lot of my female clients, I've gotten them, because they're quite like high performing or they've got a lot of things in their calendar, I also get them to like look ahead at maybe not the cycle next, but the couple of cycles ahead, in terms of like, maybe it's in the middle of a holiday, or like, when is competition day in relation to your next cycle coming up? Because a lot of women have Hyrox or turf games and things like that that I coach. So knowing when you ovulate is a really beneficial information to have. So at least like knowing that date, like when that tends to be for you, day 14, day 15, day 14, 13, sorry, like what, which time span, because then you get to understand like what phase of your cycle you're in next. So even if you just had that, and you can easily know that from tracking changes in vaginal discharge, your temperature, because your temperature increases as you ovulate, you get a spike in it. So you can sort of track your basal line temperature and just have that. If you want to look at, I think having a kind of a scenario where you assess sleep and all the things that you mentioned are really useful, to be able for you on a quote unquote like bad day, or when things feel really tough, to be like, okay, I'm at this point, so maybe it is related to that, because I'm not here to blame everything on hormones, but I also am at the same time. So I think it's also good power and knowledge for women to have, just to know what day of the week they are, because we are different physiology every single week.
Yeah,
I was going to say, it is empowering to have the knowledge and the know. And I don't track my cycle every month, but I do know. I know exactly when I'm going to come on based off mood. I get like hot flushes, almost like a menopausal woman. Like, I am so irritable and impatient with people. I'm gagging for chocolate. I'm tripping over things. My balance is off. And I'm like, And then I'll have one terrible night's sleep. And then about 1 or 2 days after that, I'll come on my period.
Yeah.
So I kind of am just really aware, but I think tracking is really helpful. Like, I do recommend tracking to clients, especially if they're not sure. Actually, one of my clients asked, so she has PCOS, and her question was, actually, I've written it down, it'd be easier for me to read it off. If your cycle is really varied, is there a way to tell when it will come? None of my symptoms seem to follow a pattern. And so I asked her, like, is she tracking? And she said she's tracked for years and there's just no rhyme or rhythm to it.
Interesting. I guess that would be really amazing to sort of use as a case study to implement. I mean, I don't know how many things they've tried to sort of regulate the cycle or improve the symptoms or get that back in. I don't want to say sync, because as long as she's irregularly regular, then I guess that's not a problem at all. And I guess you can then sort of predict that. But like, how irregular? Like, is it within a couple of days? Is it a week? Because PCOS can largely, you know, impact the timing of those phases and what the timings of ovulation. So if it's been a lot of years and there hasn't been much change to it, I guess I think that would be an amazing opportunity to sort of try supplements, try lifestyle or nutrition to sort of see whether that has any impact, because she's got so much data to work on that you could maybe get it to a point where you could change something.
Yeah, she is making a lot of lifestyle changes at the moment. In the last sort of like Great. 2 to 3 months, she's really made a push on training, walking. She's on inositol, I believe.
Amazing.
Like, she, and we're working on stress management and things. So she is starting to put, kind of bring it all together. And I think now it's just a matter of kind of managing time expectations and having that patience of like the fruits of her labour, really.
Yeah, completely. It is really tricky, isn't it? Because I've got a couple of clients, well, most of my clients, but a couple who particularly struggle with really irregular cycles. Like, one will be like 19 days and then the next time it'll be like 40 days. And they're just like, rah! Because it's really affecting like how then their decision making, their mood, like how they feel about themselves. And as we said, you know, when you've got somebody who's looking at, even though they know the science and that you can reassure them every single month, they still go, but the scale's just gone up by 3 pounds. Like, that's just infuriating. I know that it's not anything that I'm doing, but, you know, it still really riles me to see.
Yeah. Oh, so you mean from like a body weight or like a fat loss perspective in terms of that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It can be. So one thing I will, like, one, I'll just take the scales away from them, to be honest. If any of my clients really struggle with not getting their head out of the data and applying too much emotion to it, and that's affecting their mood and then their intake because of that, you should always, like, monitor your weight based on, like, week one of month one of your cycle versus week one of month two of your cycle. So you have some, you can't just, like, weigh yourself ovulation time versus end of luteal and like not expect that fluctuation.
Yeah.
Like,
Beyonce,
your body's a female will fluctuate by, it can be up to, I want to say like 5% of your body weight in a daily basis, or definitely a half a kg is a minimum. So that water retention because of progesterone is huge. It's like that is there. So you're not going crazy and like, but to be able to differentiate like water from fat, which is why having like body scans or in-body machines can be helpful. But yeah, Kristen Stewart or Billie Eilish, whoever you've got, if she's going to look at her body, there's not a chance in hell she's going to have a great body image day or want to make the healthy choices with her food. Yeah. So you're kind of fighting a lot of resistance. So I'm definitely never going to recommend anybody start dieting or choosing to get on a diet in those 2 weeks of their cycle. Like, wait till you freaking Beyonce. At least she's got a fighting chance.
I would love to see Beyonce in her Kristen Stewart phase. Or does she just stay Beyonce? She just slays all month round.
I bet she's sassy as all hell in Kristen Stewart phase.
You would know. Do you know Lindsay is like upset, like a little borderline obsessed with Beyonce? She's an actual problem.
I did it. Okay.
Yeah, I've outed her now.
Well, yeah, but I'm not enjoying the cowboy situation right now.
What's that?
Well, she's done some country vibes, hasn't she?
I might like it.
I don't know.
See, we would have been like, what?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I'll show you a picture.
I probably like that.
She's gone all Stetson. Yeah.
Well, I guess for her specifically, she's probably Beyonce in Lucha phase, but Sasha Fierce, like, you know, the first 2 weeks. So yeah. I guess Sarah's referring more her stage presence and her alter ego, her persona. Yeah. And when you're your best self, I guess any woman can translate it to, yeah, whatever alter ego you've got, that is, I guess, a more confident, more extroverted, more on top of your game version, that would be more likely in line with you having, you know, estrogen on board.
Yeah, definitely.
I think mine's Miley Cyrus. I think that's who I'm going with.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Miley Cyrus is probably my Beyonce.
I'll let you have that.
Thank you. Who's your Beyonce, Dee Dee? Or do you use Beyonce?
I mean, I only like saying Kristen Stewart because I was obsessed with Twilight, if I'm honest. So I just like to use that as an analogy. Maybe a bit prehistoric of me, and sometimes that goes down like a lead balloon when I do talks, and like, just nobody knows who she is anymore. I've watched Twilight. I'm too old for this game.
I know, he's like, no, as soon as you say Kristen Stewart, you just have this feeling of, oof. Everything just kind of goes down a notch.
Dark.
Yeah.
Dark.
Moody. Dark.
So mood.
And some women may just be like, I don't feel that way at all in my luteal. Like, some women can transition with seamlessly through their phases of their cycle. They don't notice any PMS issues or some, you know, it's going to land where it lands in terms of resonance with how women feel hormonally, but a lot of us struggle. And I think the exact way you reported PCOS and how it affects you is like, that's so spot on. For me, digestively, I really note that that's when I can see that hormonal shift because of bloating, you know, bowel movement changes. And often we're like, why is my stomach so bad today? And then 2 days later, your cycle arrives and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, fine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, body image as well is a big one. That just goes through the floor for people. And I've done so much work on body image and got myself into a great place. And I'm like, it's not a thing necessarily for me anymore. And then every however long it is, usually like 6 weeks, there'll just be a day where I'm like, I fucking hate myself. I feel like shit. Oh, you're disgusting. And then the next day I'm like, what was wrong with me? And then it all makes sense. But yeah, body image can go absolutely through the floor. And for a lot of my clients who've worked on body image, they'll get to that time of the month and they'll go, I've done all this work and it's just, I've gone backwards and it's all just not working. And I'm like, it is working. Hun, come on, hormones is a thing. Yeah. There's things going on here. You are doing the work, it's working out.
But that, I think
you're
that's
so right.
That's probably one of the things that I wish we could, well, all kind of work out for ourselves, because I think we all go through that. I mean, I'm generalising, but, you know, we experience that with my friends, with clients, with women around me. And it's, you know, that is so typical of like a behaviour where then that's weirdly where people will go, oh, I feel fat. So I'm going to get on the scale and reaffirm to myself that I am, this is not working. And I'm doing everything wrong. And just, I'm like, why? Why? Leave yourself alone and be kind to yourself at this point in the month. It's like one of the first things that if somebody messages me going, I feel terrible, it's not working, I feel really blah, blah, blah. I'm like, where are you in your cycle? Oh,
exactly,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. As a coach, you get check-ins and you're like, dear God, like, I need to call them. Like, what is going on for them? And then you get them on the call the day after. And you're like, oh, don't worry. Like, I'm fine now. I was like, Jesus, I was panicking. Like, I thought the world was ending. They're like, everything's bad. I'm terrible. I ate so much chocolate. I'm like, oh, God. Right, okay. Like, let's just breathe. It's okay. And then you get them in the court and they're like, yes, you know. My cycle's come. I'm like, oh, okay.
I love that you've said this, so that any of my clients that are listening that I've had this conversation with, I'm like, I'm not the only coach that goes through this with you.
Oh, then. God, no. Like, I get their email response come through and I'll go through and I'll be like, what the hell has happened? Like, everything's gone wrong. And they don't even mention, like, I kid you, you can have this entire like spiel of like negative dialogue and they don't even make one correlation to the fact that it's their hormones or their cycle. They just don't see it. I'm like, here's this and that's why. But it's amazing how much we won't accept it as a cause for a lot of the way that we feel and behave.
Yeah, it goes, instead of going logically and rationally, it's that time of the month, it's my hormones, it's this, it's my bad sleep from last night, we go, I'm just a fuck up, I've just not done well enough, it's because I missed that one training session last Monday, it's because I've done something wrong. And I'm like, comes back to all the self-compassion that we talk about. And it's so hard because at the time of the month where you need it the most is where it's hardest to like pull from.
Yeah, completely. That's the irony of it, isn't it? It's like where you actually, we should be being kindest to ourselves and being able to go, right, I know, like, I can anticipate that this is how I'm going to feel. It still doesn't make any difference. Mm-hmm. You can anticipate it and go, oh, yeah, even have a coach or somebody to say to you, go take yourself off for a nice bath, watch a film, yeah, have a good cry, you know, and you still, we get so used to, and it's like, well, I don't know about you, Didi, but like the narrative for me growing up was like kind of you don't talk about it, you just crack on with it. I mean, I danced and I was like always in leotards and stuff, so it was, you know, it was tricky, but like we all just got on with it. We just got on with it. We just did it. Like you did a show, you know. My kids, they're like, I can't possibly go to school. I'm bleeding.
Yeah.
And I'm like, eh? But do you know what I mean? Like, there's that sort of, I think there has been more of a shift with the, like, younger generations. But my generation, it was just like, yeah, that's just happening to me and I don't even think about how I feel about it. And I think that's quite a common theme with a lot of women that I work with, is, like, just getting them to register, like you've said, like, where they are and how that's affecting them, and to just, yeah, practice a little bit of self-kindness and empathy.
Which is where tools like, you know, mindfulness, awareness, journaling, all of those things that are, I guess, seen as a little bit too holistic or like, I don't want to say like airy-fairy, but there's like evidential science proof that those things help. And that's why I got a diploma in CBTs, because those things are so powerful to be able to actually be progressive with taking yourself out and just watching what you're doing, your thoughts, not identifying with every thought you have. Like, to me, that's just wild, to be able to have thoughts and not believe everything that comes into your head, where a lot of us do. Like, I'm fat today. Okay, I'm fat. I'm a terrible person. Like, we're just watching and, like, listening to this voice in our head. And as women, I think the topic of, one, being able to show our emotions, the fact that we are very much internal dialogue related, a million tabs open, we struggle to be able to communicate sometimes how we truly feel because of our roles in society. I think everything is interlinked, and as you said, I don't come from a generation of women that were particularly communicative or could express themselves, so our generations are having to, you know, do the inner work, go to therapy, understand ourselves a lot better to actually progress with things like understanding how we think and behave, especially when it comes to food and hormones.
I think this might be the final question, and it's from me. If you could fix one thing for the majority or as many women as you could, what would it be? If you could fix one thing that people struggle with the most that you coach, what would you choose?
I would say desire to change your body for any other reason than health. Like, I think we really do struggle to not constantly pursue dieting and changing your body to fit a narrative or expectations that aren't, you know, sometimes it can be masked as like, oh, I'm doing this for my health, or I'm doing this for this. And like, you're just dieting because you're uncomfortable with your body. You don't like the way you look and you think that that outcome is going to correlate to feelings. Whereas I'm here for supporting health and fat loss as a result of that. But I think we are so, like, the amount of times I have relationship with food being so problematic and also their desire to change their body to achieve fat loss, it's like you cannot do both. So I would try, if I could, compassionately, to take away anybody's desire to change their bodies, but unless it was like health focused for a reason.
Love we would answer. Live on a different planet.
Does that make
planet.
Sense?
Oh, yeah. We, like, the world would be a better place if that could be fixed with a click of the fingers. I just think, where do you begin with that?
Didi, you could definitely magic that to happen.
Yeah, we support you. Vote for Didi.
Didi for president.
The world really would be a much better place.
I think we've covered everything there that we wanted to cover. Have you got anything else you wanted to say, Do?
There was one question that was sent in about, is there a specific blood test to check for hormones? I did reply to this person and asked, is there a specific reason they were wanting to know about testing, and they didn't get back to me, so I'm not sure why.
I think for blood tests, it has to be so specific on timing. So if it's for fertility, I believe, I'm not completely aware of it, but they would get, even if you're going for HRT or going through a private clinic, they'll take your hormones at different points in your cycle. So I think just to take one random blood test without having understanding of where your baseline has been, which I think is... Yeah, it depends on what their context is. Is it menopause would dictate sort of how that would go for them? So yes, I don't think I have an exact answer for that, but I guess it would be, you would have to have sort of at certain times of your cycle, different blood tests and levels to be able to correlate to see whether there is a problem or not and where that falls in within ranges.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a really important answer, to be fair, to make sure that if you are going for blood tests for whatever purpose, to make sure you're getting more than just one in the month. I don't think that's actually something most people would even think of. And I know when I was having all my blood tests done for PCOS and everything, I was never tested more than a few months apart, like once, randomly. So.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. I don't know what certain, you know, the protocol is for blood testing amongst conditions, but I think, and especially when like hormones or contraceptions are involved, then I think that's just a completely different ballgame.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense that it should be more, have more regular blood tests to get a fuller picture of what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Right. Dawn, right. Thank you so much for coming on, Dee Dee. Really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Sorry for all the glitchiness.
I know, this is going to be a fun one to edit.
No, don't worry. Honestly, if you wanted to repeat this, then I can appreciate having to edit it. This would be a minefield, and I guess we've already had a decent run. So any of the times you want to repeat it, or if you want to give this one a crack at editing, honestly, I don't mind just spitballing again. Lovely. And doing a repeating this.
Fantastic. Oh, thank you so much.
All right. Enjoy your afternoon.
Not at all. Have a good day, ladies.
See you.